Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Tammy Carver. Welcome to the John Carver Show. My husband has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
John Carver here, guys, having some technical difficulties here. That's just humbly frustrating. It's not like me to have these kind of glitches. Let's try this again. Let's start over. Well, you know what? We're going to share with you another sermon that I did today called Meanwhile I Will. Figure out what's going on with Land on Your Feet as soon as I can.
So the text today I'm calling Meanwhile I Will. Meanwhile I Will is a partial sentence. And the term meanwhile, by definition, is, actually there's a few definitions. One is for now, one is for the moment, one is for the time being, one is in the interim. And I think growing up, there's been quite a few people that are just in the meanwhile stage. They're waiting for stuff to happen. They're hanging around until, as one poet called it, their ship would come in. Well, I'm still waiting for mine. I would dare say to you, you're going to hear this echoed more than a few times here today, that oftentimes you need to swim out to it. Many times your ship does not land at your front door. And I've seen many, many people that attempt to make it big time by doing things that really don't make any sense. I've seen people stuck with a problem and waste sometimes decades of their lives waiting for that problem to be resolved instead of working on the problem themselves and resolving the problem on their own. I think too many people create a lifestyle of meanwhile. Again, too many people create a lifestyle of meanwhile. Somebody said that proper planning prevents poor performance, the five P's. There's some more five P's I'll share. Proper preparation prevents poor performance, right? Being a proactive person. Prior planning provides people protection. This is all about being proactive in your life and my life. Next is proper planning provides people protection. I said that. Proper practice prepares perfect players. Don't ask me to say that five times fast. The last one is poor planning promotes poor performance. Again, poor planning promotes poor performance. So again, if you and I don't become proactive in everything that we do in our lives, we're going to end up with this last one, which is poor planning promotes poor performance. Turn, please, over to Matthew chapter number 25. Matthew chapter 25 tells a story, and it's a very interesting story. It's a story that reminds me that I cannot take any chances at all with my preparation. Matthew 25, starting in the first verse, says, "Then the kingdom of heaven will be comparable to 10 virgins who took their lamps." Now, listen, we're talking 2,000 years ago, okay? And in this culture, in that culture, rather, some men in some cultures were allowed to have multiple wives. They were not Mormons. Mormonism was not invented at the time. but in that culture, that was not too uncommon. So they took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom, the story says, and five of them were foolish and five were prudent. I think the King James Version calls them wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the prudent took oil and flasks along with their lamps. Now, while the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy and began to sleep. But at midnight, there was a shout, "Behold, the bridegroom! Come out to meet him." Then all those rose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the prudent, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the prudent answered, "No, there will be not enough for us and you too. So go instead to the dealers," this text says, "and buy some for yourselves." Now verse 10, listen. Verse 10 says, "And while they were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came. And those who were ready went in with him and to the wedding feast, and the door was shut. Later, the others came back saying, 'Lord, Lord, help us, open the door for us.' But he answered, 'Truly, I say to you, I don't know you, but on the alert then, for you do not know that the hour, the day, or the hour.'" The point being that half of them were foolish, half of them didn't have forethought, and half of them were prudent, or as the King James calls them, wise. There's something to be said for the power of preparation. My wife is an awesome example of being prepared. I mean, she'll have lists and she'll have so much organized and ready to go. I mean, she even has a bag packed for a hospital visit just in case, instead of rushing around forgetting stuff. It's all ready to go. Preparation really helps a whole lot. Again, there were five wise and five foolish. Think about the times in your own life when you've dropped the ball on numerous occasions because you didn't have proper planning. You didn't have enough forethought to think about what could happen in your own life. There seems to be a level of importance that's always put on being prepared. Would you think about driving 1,000 miles without planning on where you're going to be staying or getting gas or any number of preparation? Again, verse 9, "But the prudent answered, 'No, there will not be enough for us and you too, so go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves.'" There is a segment of the population in every single zip code that assumes that you're going to be there to pick them up because they choose not to prepare. I suggest to you and I that we're not on that foolish side of that mathematical formula, half being prudent and half being foolish. There was a story that's been told multiple ways in multiple times in multiple parts of the world. But Sven, S-V-E-N was his name, and Jack are two hardy loggers. One day, Jack challenges Sven, "Who can hand cut the most trees in a single day?" Sure of himself, he accepts the challenge. The rules are simple. Each gets one saw to fall the most trees by the end of the day. The winner gets a gourmet lunch prepared by the other for a whole week. This is a big challenge for a guy. When the whistle blows to start the competition, Jack picks up his saw and gets right to work. Sven takes a difficult route. Instead of hustling to his first tree, he pulls out his sharpening kit, sits down with his back against a stump, and spends almost an hour honing and the several hundred serrated edges on his trusty tool. The other loggers taught Sven, "What are you? Why are you wasting your time? I hope you like wearing a chef's hat." But Sven knows better. He knows that just under an hour looks like wasted time, but they actually translate into many more times in productive tree cutting. When Sven's finally started, Jack is a full 10 trees ahead of him. But he's also tired. The dull saw is overworking him and he's slowing down. Sven, however, rips through the trees, tree after tree after tree. His razor sharp saw falls them effortlessly. By early afternoon, Jack has given up. He's hunched over. He's exhausted. Sven blows right past him, falling trees well into the evening, and at the end of the day, stands tall, looking over his accomplishment without so much as a heavy breath. There seems to be credibility places on proper preparation versus waiting for good things to happen. So I wonder whom fixed whom lunch for the following week. I think I know. I think the one who sharpened the saw ate very, very well. Because he took the time to invest. He invested the time. He didn't, you know, there's a silly little thing that I'm having issues with, and I have had issues with now for a year or two, is the word spent versus invested. Mm-hmm. Spent, and I've shared this a long time ago, but sometimes we go and we say, well, I'm going to go spend time with Aunt so-and-so or Uncle so-and-so, or I'm going to spend time here doing this or spend time. Well, to me, spending, this is just a personal thing, off notes, off topic, but spending seems to be wasting something. Whereas investing, I'm going to invest some time with Aunt so-and-so or Uncle so-and-so. It just gives a whole new hat, a whole new viewpoint, a whole new set of frames on how you're doing things and how you're investing your time. Stephen Covey said, the late Stephen Covey, he said, if you're proactive, you don't have to wait for circumstances or other people to create perspective-expanding experiences. I'll read that again. You can consciously create your own. Let me share it again. If you're proactive, he said, you don't have to wait for circumstances or other people to create, listen, perspective-expanding experiences. And I read a lot. I read a lot about people who've been there, done that, done very well. And every single one of them I've read about always stretch and say, you know what, if it's, the old saying is, if it's to be, it's up to me to make it happen. So sometimes we, out of maybe exhaustion, maybe we're just so tired at different times in our life, maybe we just want to stop and rest. I don't mind telling you, but you and I don't have time to stop and rest very long. I'm talking maybe moments. Because when you stop and rest, you tend to regress. Because you know what's happening? The other folks are just breezing right past you because you've chosen to stop and rest. So many times haven't you taken, you were going to take a power nap, and 2.5 hours later, you're waking up instead of a half an hour later or 20 minutes later. You just wasted 2.5 hours, actually, in my book, wasted all that time. You know what I'm saying? Now, I can remember reading different stories in the Bible. There's so many. I didn't even count. I didn't get the number. But there's probably at least dozens, maybe hundreds of stories in Scripture. But in this particular case, Jesus encouraged many people around him not to waste time, not to dawdle. Have you met children that dawdle? Let me get a little more personal. Have you met adults that dawdle? Hence, they waste time instead of maximizing their time. So Jesus taught them that, you know, maybe you need to tweak a little bit here. Maybe you need to switch your belief system just a little tiny bit. And then you're going to be able to see things that you haven't seen before. You know, a few weeks ago, I shared a story about Jesus feeding multiple thousands of people with just a few items. But I think there's times when you have to be proactive in looking for what's available to create a miracle in your own life. Let me kind of slow down a bit on that. If somebody hadn't spoken up and said, here's a seed, the story, if you don't know the story, there was thousands of people who heard about Jesus. They followed him up into the mountain. They didn't have 7-Elevens or Wawa's or, you know, Wise stores or Giant Food or whatever. They didn't have any of that stuff. We're talking 2,000 plus years ago. These guys were getting hungry, the story says. And one of the disciples came to Jesus like, we need to send these guys home. It's getting late. You know, they need to go home and eat a meal. Jesus said, well, you know, we can't be doing that because there's nothing around. So one of the guys says, well, look, you know, this kid brought, you know, a couple pieces of bread, a couple pieces of fish. But what's that to so many? I think the text actually says. Well, Jesus leveraged that not so much for so many to make much. So the point I'm saying is sometimes your seed, I would say more than a few times, your seed could be multiplied into a miracle if you're willing to leverage the seed, if you're willing to offer the seed for God to make a miracle out of what you perceive as something very, very small. This is a very, very important point. Because some of us go through times in our lives that say, because of all this baggage I've had, because of all these issues I've had, I can't possibly become X, Y, or Z. Well, don't you know that maybe that baggage that you've been through all these years could be a seed for you to do just that? that you wouldn't have had the seed if you wouldn't have gone through the stuff that you've gone through. Write this down. Proactive people look for miracles waiting to be birthed. Again, proactive people, I'll say it three times, maybe four. Proactive people look for miracles waiting to be birthed. Again, proactive people look for miracles waiting to be birthed. I would suggest to you and I that we walk past potential miracles every day that just need a little, that just need a little push, that just need a little encouragement, that just need a little shove in the right direction, that they're just on the edge of a miracle. Maybe the people that you work around maybe are just on the edge of a miracle, and it's you that could make that miracle a reality just by doing just a little bit more, just by doing a little act of love, by extending a hand of encouragement, by sowing a seed into their lives that could be that catalyst in their lives that could literally change the way they're acting. One author says, miracles are a retelling of small things in the very same story, which is written across the world so big for some of us to see. I think in your life and my life that there are miracles that are about to happen all around us. What, I'll say it probably several times here today, but what if, and I said this weeks ago, what if that little boy's mother or this child's mother who had the fish and loaves, didn't pack the fish and the loaves in preparation to feed the kid because the kid was out. I don't know what the kid was doing out with these adults. I have no clue. I didn't say. I'm not going to even guess. But the point is that he was there in the crowd, and Jesus leveraged the little. He leveraged the little bit. So the little bit that you and I have can be used and invested in so many other people's lives. Someone said, Shannon Alder writes, you will face your greatest opposition when you're closest to your biggest miracle. Again, you will face the greatest opposition when you're closest to your biggest miracle. Have things ever gotten really, really tough on you when you look back, when you were on the edge of a breakthrough? It seemed like from, you know, point from 1 to 9, and it was a 10-step process. 1 to 9 was, it was difficult, but not as difficult as between 9 and 10. And you pushed, and you didn't think that you could break through. Well, that I think proves this quote here, that sometimes you reach a certain point where you're right at step 9, and 10 is an A plus, and you know, from 1 to 9 is barely making it. But the heat gets the hotter when you get closest to the breakthrough. So when it's getting hot now, when it's getting difficult, when it's getting stressful, when things are getting a little crazy, then I think sometimes you got to remind yourself that you're closer than you think you are because things are getting a little wacky. So somebody, which is a very interesting name, by the name of Lemony, says, miracles are like pimples, which I've never really viewed miracles like pimples before, but I thought it was an interesting illustration. Miracles are like pimples because once you start looking for them, you find more than you ever dreamed you'd see. Us teenagers should understand that. Notice I put myself in. My son's looking at me like, I don't think so, Dad. I'll read it again. Miracles are like pimples because once you start looking for them, you'll find more than you ever dreamt you'd see. One guy named Frederick, he writes, a miracle is one with... when the whole is greater, listen, a miracle is when the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. A miracle is when you 1 + 1 = 1,000. Because you don't know what act of love, what act of sacrifice is going to do for somebody else. I'm tempted to go down a certain road and I'm waddling on that fence whether I should go down that road or not. Let me think on it for a few minutes. I'm sure somewhere, somebody at some time way back when thought that when Thomas Edison perfected the light bulb, they viewed it as a miracle. It was a miracle. He created the incandescent light bulb. But his miracle came, I read, after 1,000 attempts, that miracle happened. And I was teasing somebody up here earlier, Can you read these notes?
Yeah.
There was a time when this person, like every person who does music, couldn't read the notes. Oh, he just went to bed one day and woke up and he could read the notes. It was so easy for him. I know it was so easy for him because he's brilliant. That's probably not how it happened. I didn't ask him, but I would probably, that's not how it happened.
Yeah, no.
Years and years and hard work and frustration, wanting to kick the dog and getting irritated and frustrated, I'm sure, which happens to all of us when we're trying to learn something new. Miracles just don't happen all the time. They happen occasionally, but not all the time instantaneously. Sometimes the miracles happen in time because you didn't quit in the process. I'm hoping I'm making sense. A guy named Noah writes, a miracle is often the willingness to see the common in an uncommon way. Have you ever, you know, Butch and I like to take photographs a lot, and I've seen Butch's photographs online from time to time, and I would say 99% of the public would walk past what he and I would think is something really cool, and we would snap a photograph of it or photographs of it. Because we see something, because we have an eye for it, we're looking for it, actually. We're looking for an image that's going to stand out, maybe we can use or leverage, or we just think it's cool. Because, when you look for miracles in your life, the point is, when you look for miracles in your life, you often find them, but sometimes you need to reframe what you're looking for in order to see the miracle. I've had to do that in my life more than a couple of times. Turn over to John chapter 5. John chapter 5 is a very interesting story that I've obviously done a lot of homework on these texts that I share. But there's missing pieces in this story that I'm not going to fill in because I don't know what those pieces are. But there's something that stands out to me in this story in John chapter 5. It says in verse 1, after these things, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went to Jerusalem. Now, just so we're clear for those who don't know, we're talking, this story is about 2,000 years old in what's now the part of the world called Israel. And in that culture, they had multiple feasts during different times of the year. It was a religious culture at the time. So verse 2. Now, there in Jerusalem by the sheep gate was a pool, and this pool in Hebrew is called Bethesda, or another phrase would be calling it the place of outpouring, having five porticos, and in these lay a multitude of those who were sick, blind, lame, and withered, waiting for the moving of the waters. Listen, they were waiting for the moving of the waters. Verse 4, but an angel of the Lord, it says, went down at certain seasons into the pool and stirred up the water. Whoever then first, after the stirring up of the water, stepped in and was made well from whatever disease with what he was afflicted, a man was there who had been sick for now 38 years. Verse 6, when Jesus saw him lying there, he knew that he had been there a long time in that condition. He said to him, do you want to get well? I'm in verse 7 now. The sick man answered him, sir, I have no man to put me in the pool when the water is stirred up, but while I am coming, another one steps down before me. Jesus said to him in verse 8, get up, pick up your pallet, and walk. Immediately the man became well and picked up his pallet or his little bed and began to walk. Now it was on the Sabbath day, so the Jews were saying to this man who was cured. Now in that culture on the Sabbath day, you're not supposed to do diddly squat. I mean, nothing. You can't push a button. You can't pick up a log. You can't do diddly. Okay? So they were flipping out because Jesus healed this guy because it was on the Sabbath day. Oh my, right? So it was on the Sabbath day, verse 10. So the Jews were saying to the man who was cured, it's the Sabbath. It's not permissible for you to carry your bed. Hello, he's been sick. Stick this in context. He's been sick, couldn't walk for 38 years, and they're getting stuck on a little religious little hook. Oh my God, you can now walk. They weren't happy because he was able to walk. They were ticked off because he was carrying something. He was carrying his bed on the holy day. You see where context, you see where how you view things can literally change how a miracle happens. Let me pause and slow down just a little bit more. This dude was waiting for a number of years for what the story says. An angel comes in, stirs up the water, and the first one in the water gets it. Now, you know, maybe somebody can correct me after church, hopefully not right this second. But who made the rule that only the first one would be healed? What if, let me just throw in an insertion here. What if 5 years ago, 10 years, 15, 20 years ago, the guy was there. He was among the crowd. One guy gets in, he gets healed. He said, hey guys, the rule says, he made this rule up when he got in the boat, but only the first one gets in. So the others didn't even try. The point is, sometimes people set up standards to keep you away from your miracle. Sometimes they manufacture stuff to keep you in your lame mode, your mode whereby you don't even think that you have the power to become. So Jesus said, look, I want you to look at this a little differently. Do you want to be healed or don't you? Yes, of course. Well, then Jesus said, well, forget the rule. Forget the angel in the water. Look at me, because I'm the source of your healing. I'm the source of your miracle. So what I'm asking you and I to do to maybe switch your angle just a little bit, because when you choose by what the scriptures say to look at it just a little differently, sometimes your entire viewpoint changes. And then oftentimes you're able to receive a miracle because now you see it differently. You can embrace it differently, whereby before you saw it one way and one way only. Am I making sense to anybody here today at all? So the lame man's faith, listen, the lame man's faith was in the water. Jesus then went to the man and created a miracle for the man. Yes or no? So how many people, including the ones in the mirror, look at certain things in your life and say, you know what, this can't happen because, in this story, the angel moved the water and I was the third one in. I didn't work because I was the third one in, or the fifth one, or the 30th one in. You know what I'm saying? Because somebody said so. Or maybe because I can't see it from this angle because I've only been here in this spot for this amount of time. I can't see it. I can't even imagine it possibly happening to me. So Jesus comes up on the scene and says, look, I want you to do you want to be different? Do you want to change your life? Do you want to walk again? So he got this guy's eyes off of the water, right? Onto the possibilities, to the potential of, yes, actually, I would love to walk. So Jesus said, in very simple terms, just get up and walk. Just do it. So many times you and I don't really realize that we can walk because so many times we've been laying around, in quotes, of course, mentally probably, for so many years not thinking, not can't even imagine that we can do more than what we can do until guess what happens? It blows my mind every stinking time that you get up and do it because you choose to do it. You choose to do it. When you stand up, you're able to do it. My dad, you know, I've shared this story so many times, but I'm still not 50, so I'm not old yet, right? So I only have a limited amount of stories. I was terrified of swimming until my dad taught me how to swim. He says, the water will hold you up. Right, sure, the water will hold me up. He goes, if you relax. So I'm like, so I'm sinking. And then he said, chill, relax. He probably didn't use the word chill, but relax. So once I relaxed, guess what happened? Water was able to hold up, I don't know how much I weighed at the time, a few pounds. Because why? I was forced to look at what was helping me sink that would literally then help me what? Float, because I changed how I looked at it. That's just one example. And you think in your own life, that you've gone through stuff in your life and you struggled for so long, for so many years with stuff, that once you looked at it differently, you mean I struggled over this for 27 years and I didn't have to because I saw it from this angle instead of this angle? Dumb. Am I making any sense to anybody? What if you and I followed that model that Jesus used and went to people in your life to bring miracles into their life? there's now two roads I want to go down. Let me just go down one road. Maybe I'll insert number two. For many, many years, I would visit people in their homes. And in a certain demographic of people, in a certain age range of these people would have difficulty looking at me in the eye. Now, I was, at the time, 20 to 40 years younger than these people. I was looking up to them because of years, because of experience, because of life. They can teach me volumes of, but because of how they were raised, they had a very difficult, we would talk and they'd be like this and look, and I was like, beg them, please just, you know, look at me, teach me. But because of culture, because of history, now into their 70s and 80s, they were still struggling with that, I'll call the word baggage. It was wrong. It was unjustified. It just aches at me that people are still dealing with baggage from 30, 50, 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the point being is sometimes when you and I go through stuff, it's very, very hard to reframe, to change, because it's so ingrained into us that what we've been through, we think is our reality, when oftentimes it's really a perspective. It's not really the truth. Robert Ingersoll writes, the hands that help are better than lips that pray. That's a whole new text that's probably interlocked with this text here today. But it's been really ragging my brain in a big way. Let me share the text again. The hands that help are better than lips that pray. Again, the hands that help are better than lips that pray. That's by Robert Ingersoll. How many times don't you and I have the ability to do something, but as a Christian, I will pray for you, my brother. I will pray for you, my sister. Well, there comes a point, young ladies and young gentlemen and old ladies, older ladies in our midst, that sometimes you need to do something about it. That you've been given the opportunity, you've been given the hunch, the desire, the craving to help. And then your immediate response or my immediate response is, I will pray about it, or I will pray for you. That goes, I could get in big trouble after church on this one, but prayer gets stuff done only so much. Oh man, that's a big thorn in my side. I'm really trying to keep my composure up here. But sometimes prayer only goes so far, when then you need to take it a step up and say, you know, I've prayed about it, now I want to do something about it. Mm-hmm. I want to make a difference. I want to invest into the struggle that you're going through, because I have that much love in my heart for you that I want to go beyond just praying. All right. And thinking that Sister So-and-so and Mr. So-and-so and Miss Jones and Mr. Smith over there will fix the problem, when it's laying heavy on your heart and your mind to fix the problem. That's, oh man, don't get me started. So how many people do you know, listen, how many people do you know are waiting for something else to happen before they can feel like they can take the very next step? Sometimes we get stuck that says, you know what, I have to go from step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, when that's what the rule book says, that's what we were taught in school, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But what if in your life that, you know, you can skip from 1 to 4? I remember I was in third grade, and this girl named Donna, I think her name was Donna Shackelford, if I remember her name. Donna Shackelford was so smart. She was in our third grade class for, I don't know, let's say less than a month, maybe less than a week. I know it was a very short amount of time. And then I heard that Donna was no longer in our class. I was like, wait a minute, why isn't Donna in our class? Donna was moved up to fourth grade. I'm like, what? Something isn't right with this picture. She's the same age as me, you know, lived in the same zip code as me, but she was so smart and is so smart that she didn't even have to go through third grade. I was pretty bent out of shape. Because I had to go through, I had Mrs. High for a teacher, not that High suggested anything, that was her name, And I'd go through, you know, I don't know, 8 or 9 months of third grade. But Donna got to skip Mrs. High and go right to fourth grade. Sometimes, the point is, sometimes that, you know, steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 don't necessarily apply to you. But if you think that they apply to you, then you're going to act accordingly and do accordingly and work accordingly and assume accordingly when it doesn't necessarily accordingly need to be. So the man by the pool put, listen, so the man by the pool in the story of Jesus put his future into the hands of fate. See, I've learned that fate doesn't produce miracles. Fate does not produce miracles. Being proactive in most things produces miracles. That's been my observation. Stephen Covey said one time, he says, people who end up with the good jobs are the proactive ones, who are solutions to problems, not problems themselves, who sees the initiative to do whatever is necessary, consistent and correct principles to get the job done. Proactive people get it done. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 12. The Living Bible puts it in a pretty unique way. Hebrews chapter 12. Starting in verse number 1. Hebrews chapter 12, Living Bible says, since we have a huge crowd of men of faith watching us from the grandstands, listen, let us strip off anything that slows us down or holds us back, and especially those sins that wrap themselves so tightly around our feet, trip us up. And listen to this. This is the part I can't stand. And let us run with patience the particular race that God has set before us. One of my pet peeves is patience. Verse 2. Keeping your eyes on Jesus, our leader and instructor, he was willing to die a shameful death on the cross because of the joy he knew would be his afterwards. And now he sits in the place of honor by the throne of God. So this particular part ends with verse 3. So if you want to keep from becoming faint-hearted and weary, think about the patience as sinful men did such terrible things to him. Can you imagine being Jesus and being slapped around and crucified and et cetera, all the stuff that he went through, and just biting your tongue knowing that you could just have them evaporate into air with a word or a lightning strike or something? But just that type of love that and dedication to what God wanted for him in his life, I am not there yet. Shannon Alger writes, listen to this. Faith requires following the power of a whisper. Is that deep or is that deep? Shannon Alder, A-L-D-E-R, writes, faith requires following the power of a whisper. I'll say it one more time. Faith requires following the power of a whisper. There's times I believe that God wants our participation in the creation of a miracle. God wants our participation in the creation of a miracle. Amen. But you say, and I say, well, miracles only happen this particular way, with the this or with the that, or with the this or the with the this, or whatever, however you frame it. What if that frame could be extended to a number of different ways how a miracle can happen? Jesus didn't slap hands on the boy and say, cat, I'm going to do this and that with your fish. No. He says, what do you have? I have what you have. I'm going to leverage what you have. This happened all the time through Jesus' life. Listen, I'm finding out that there's multiple ways to have miracles happen in our lives if we're willing to participate in the creation of the miracle, and ideally for other people. And then imagine if other people would be participatory in the creation of miracles for you and for me. I don't think it's rocket science, but oftentimes we have to rethink, reframe how we see things. Amen. Martin Luther King said once, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. Faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. What if there's a possibility, listen, what if there's a possibility that the reason you have not received a miracle that you're waiting for is someone who wants to, could have been part of the miracle, had been ignoring the signs to do something? What if the person, let me share it again, what if there's a possibility that the reason you have not received the miracle you're waiting for is someone who is to be part of that miracle ignored the signs to do something? I would suggest to you that that happens more times than you and I will know until we end up in heaven. That somebody, somewhere, even people somewhere, somehow, didn't follow through on the hunch that they had to do a certain thing at a certain time. I'll do it later. Well, that later is too late for the person who needs a miracle right now. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of dig a little deeper in that point. What if there's a possibility, listen, that someone else who's been waiting for a specific miracle to happen and you ignored the signs to participate in that miracle? Let me share it again. What if there's a possibility that someone else who has been waiting for a specific miracle and you ignored the signs to participate in that miracle because we're too busy, or because maybe our priorities need to be adjusted, or maybe our glasses need to be adjusted, or maybe our framing about life needs to be adjusted just a little bit because we chose to ignore what was going on around us? Let me share an older example, probably 4,000 years ago. In Exodus chapter 2, the story is, there was a mom who lived in a culture where the king, that was called a pharaoh, decided that, you know what, we're going to kill the babies, a certain segment of the babies in that culture. So the mom says, look, I got this great idea that I think is maybe from God, that I think I should take this baby that's destined to die, and we're going to make a basket for this baby. And this woman lived in Egypt, and we're going to put this baby in the water, in the Nile, of all places, with alligators and other piranha and all nasty creatures. And we're going to put this baby in this basket to protect him, in quotes, to protect him from being killed by the army of this pharaoh, this king that wants to kill my baby and so many other babies. So they make this thing. They make this basket. They put him in the water. And then what was even crazier, mom sends sister to keep an eye on the basket. Mom sends sister to keep an eye on the basket. Remember the story? So then eventually the basket makes it safely, and this guy's name was Moses, who was in the basket, or they called him Moses. And then the daughter of the king, the pharaoh, who had a rule that all these babies are going to be killed, heard the baby and said, there's a baby. So they send the people over there to get the baby. Longer story short, the daughter of the king that wanted to kill the babies adopted this little guy named, now we know his name is Moses, and in time he eventually, you know, changed the history of the world, if you will, as a result of that little baby. But the point, I guess the bigger story for me, at least in this text, is what if mama wouldn't have had the hunch to do something out of the box, out of the basket, if you want to be corny, to do something different, to do something unique, for the sake of saving her baby, which eventually, in time, saved millions of people because of a hunch, and let's call it a miracle, that Moses wasn't eaten by the alligators and crocodiles and piranha. You know, God had his hand, listen, God has his hands in your miracle, whether or not you see God's hands in your miracle or not. For me, if I choose to participate in the miracle and follow through in the process of being part of something greater that we couldn't possibly imagine. Moses' daughter, who had eventually adopted Moses, had no clue. There is no way she could have possibly known what would have eventually happened as a result of doing what she did to help a little baby in distress. And what's even freakier out, man, this is a whole crazy story. But then they went and found the birth mother of, found the birth mother of Moses, who was paid by the Egyptian hierarchy to feed Moses until he was weaned. Is that like crazy or what? You know, you don't get paid to nurse your own baby. Well, if that happened, she got paid to nurse her own baby. Stuff like this doesn't happen unless sometimes we follow, unless we follow up one of those hunches that can turn out to be stuff that you have no clue how it's going to end up. But it starts with those little seeds, those little desires to do something for somebody else that you don't know how it's going to work out. But I know that somebody, I hear a baby crying in the reeds in the Nile that I need to do something about it in the story. She did something about it and changed millions of people's lives. That's the short story of that long story. So miracles happen many times. Miracles happen many times because people don't stand by with a meanwhile, I'll just wait attitude. Meanwhile, I'll just wait. You know, sometimes we wait until something breaks down in the car before we repair something. Or instead of maintaining it. You know, I pulled into the garage the other day and this loud screech, you know, happened. And I was like, oh no, you mean I ran out of this fluid or that fluid or the belt broke or whatever. So instead of me checking, you know, the oil every 2 or 3 weeks, you know, I just, longer story short, everything was fine. But the point is, sometimes you wait until you hear something, until something shatters, or you break something until you say, oh, I had an ache, instead you should have been taking care of yourself in the meantime. Don't get me started. Turn over to Psalm, not Psalm, the book of Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12, you got a guy named Eugene. He paraphrases this text beautifully. Romans 12. Starting in verse 1, Romans 12, Eugene Peterson, he paraphrases this. He says, so here's what I want you to do. Again, this is a paraphrase. This is not these and thous. This is not King James. This is Eugene's paraphrase. Eugene says this. So here's what I want you to do. God helping you, take your everyday, ordinary life, you're sleeping, you're eating, you're going to work and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. It says, embrace what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Let me repeat it again. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into to without even thinking. Instead, he says, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. King James, I think, says to present your bodies before God. And in that culture, just in context, in that culture, they sacrificed animals to cover the sins of the people, hence why that phrase is used. So meanwhile doesn't mean I will wait until the last minute to prepare. If anybody knows me well enough, I am not extemporaneous at all. When it comes, extemporaneous means that, you know, you tell me to talk about a subject, man, I know everything about everything. I am ready, absolutely. That is not John Carver III. John Carver III needs time to prepare. I would say that there's a percentage, I'd say 20% to 25% of the people here would be very, very stressed if I asked them to get up here and teach on any given subject without days or weeks of preparation. I would suggest to you and I that our lives should be ready to make a difference in people's lives consistently. There's an Old Testament story. A lady named Esther was challenged to shut up. Shut up or speak up. Meaning, I don't want to get through the whole long story about it, but if she spoke up, she had a chance of being killed. On the flip side of the coin, if she spoke up, she had a chance of saving a lot of people's lives. I think you and I have to remember that we oftentimes have to take that chance, because what could happen that's good is far better than what maybe could happen that's not so good at all. wisdom. There's a guy that lives, I don't know, 80 years ago or so, named Oswald Chambers. He said, God does not further our spiritual life in spite of our circumstances, but in and by our circumstances. You and I grow through going through stuff, not by always by ignoring stuff. Proverbs says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. Because may I insert again, sometimes our understanding isn't exactly what direction God wants us to go down. Because we only see things, like I said earlier, from one angle. One angle, that's all we see. God sees it from all the angles. So to be able to trust that God sees the angle that you need to see takes, for me at least still, a tremendous amount of faith, because what sometimes I'm urged to do makes no sense at all. But I'd say 90% of the time, looking back, it makes total sense. The other 10%, I'm still lost in the sauce. I have no idea why that happened or is happening. Listen, it's no less a miracle. Listen, it's no less a miracle when someone has a hunch to make a difference in someone's life and follows through on the hunch as the man by the pool being healed by Jesus. Let me say it again. It's no less a miracle when someone has a hunch to make a difference in someone's life and follows through on the hunch as the man that's being healed by Jesus. There's a lot of us, a lot of people waiting for stuff to happen, waiting for somebody to come by their pool and ask them to look at things a little differently. And we walk past these people every single day in our lives. Every day there's people all around us that are sitting by the pool waiting for somebody to say, look at me, look at this a little differently. If you did this, this good stuff would happen, but you got to get your eyes off of the, in this story, of the water that you're waiting for it to happen. You've been waiting now a bunch of years and you just haven't made it. Maybe you need to do something a little differently in order to get what you want. Hello.
Go ahead.
Barbara, a lady named Barbara says, the difference between people who really win is how long they take to feel sorry for themselves. This is a multimillionaire. Again, the difference between the people who win is how long they take to feel sorry for themselves. My winners feel it, but they come back up and say, quote, hit me again. All the best things that happened to me happened, listen, after I was rejected, and I knew the power of getting past no. The longer I live, the more I read. I read about it all the time, that the people that have made it big time in whatever field you choose to pick have fallen on their faces over and over again. They've been rejected over and over again. They've been discouraged over and over again. They've cried over and over again. They've gotten mad over and over again. But they kept getting up. They kept moving forward despite all the frustration and the aggravation in the middle of it. I thought, as I shared in my blog this week, that I thought that after maybe a couple of attempts to do a certain thing, I, as a younger guy, would be able to get it. But that's not normal. You know, sometimes it takes a long time to get stuff. So before you quit, you have to keep going until you get what you're trying to get. Damon John, again, another very rich person, he said, the thing about branding is it isn't etched in stone. Listen to this. A brand is a mark or an image or a perception we stamp on a product, a concept, or an ideal, but it doesn't last forever. Like anyone else, it needs to be nurtured and reinforced. It will start to fade. So you and I have to consistently keep at stuff if we want to see stuff happen. I'll end with a story. And the story we've heard more than a few times, but I really believe that it echoes or kind of packages neatly what I've been trying to say for the last hour. So one man, he was walking down a shore, and he looked down the beach and saw a human guy moving like a dancer. That could be taken a couple of different ways. He smiled to himself and thought, you know, why would somebody dance to the day? And so he walked faster to catch up to see why this guy was dancing. As he got closer, he noticed that the figure was that of a young man, and that he was with his dog was not dancing at all. The young man was reaching down to the shore and picking up small objects and throwing them into the ocean. He came closer still and called out, "Good morning, may I ask you what you're doing?" The young man paused and replied, "Throwing starfish into the ocean." "I must ask then, why are you throwing starfish into the ocean?" asked the somewhat startled wise man. To this, the young man replied, "The sun is up and the tide is going out. If I don't throw them in, they'll die." Upon hearing this, the wise man commented, "But young man, do you not realize that there are miles and miles of beach and there are starfish all along every mile? You can't possibly make a difference." At this, the young man bent down, picked up yet another starfish, and threw it to the ocean. As it met the water, he said, "It made a difference to that one." So I end today, "Meanwhile, I will make a difference." That's what I want you and I to do every single day. Meanwhile, make a difference. I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge, experience, and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in